All right, we're back. We're listening to Who's Talking, and I'm Frank Maloney with Jim Hobgood, and we've got none other than the Magic Man, Don Majkowski, with us tonight. Don, I'm looking at some of your Packer records and some of your pro exploits. As exciting as that game was, whether it was the Peach Bowl or the win down at Virginia Tech, were either of those games, would you say those were maybe one of those was your favorite moment as a Cavalier?
Well, without question, it was the Peach Bowl. I mean, the Peach Bowl, you know, wasn't necessarily my best game, you know, although I had a pretty good second half, but I knew I threw two early interceptions in the first half, and we fell behind. I forgot what it was. I forgot what the score was at halftime, but we were behind by a couple touchdowns, I think. And but the significance of that game and what it meant to the history of Virginia football is what I'll never forget. I mean, it's not often that in your career that you can be a part of history, and that was, without question, you know, a historic game for Virginia football, the first bowl game ever in the school's history, and to be a sophomore and to start at quarterback and lead a team to a victory in Atlanta on New Year's Eve on nationally televised game was, without question, the biggest and the most fun I had, I think, at Virginia.
You know, I was at that game, and I'll never forget watching the Virginia players just going absolutely bonkers on the field as the clock wound down to the end. And almost as memorable, besides the quality of the game, which was a great game between, you know, the Boilermakers and the Cavaliers, and you were dueling Jim Everett, who later went on to the NFL. The amazing thing about that game, I remember, is when we headed back to the buses, which were lined up all the way around that old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, was listening to the alumni singing on the buses. I've never, ever been to any sports event where so many people were so moved by an outcome of a sports event.
And what was even cooler than that was when we got back to the – we stayed at the Hyatt Hotel back downtown Atlanta. And when we got back to the hotel hours after the game and we walked into the lobby – there was Virginia fans that were that, – that's a hotel that the balcony just spirals up, and you could see every floor from looking – you know, from every floor. You could look down through the atrium. You could see every floor going up. There's about 50 floors. And it was just a sea of orange and blue of Virginia fans and giving us a standing ovation coming through that atrium and that – it was just – it was phenomenal. And
yeah, I always
– going crazy. That was a great moment. That's something that I always remember as well.
That's funny. I always talk about sports being all about moments, be it the one you just described after a game or on the field. And, of course, the other part is relationships. But let me just move you on to the NFL. Speaking of special places and moments, Lambeau Field. Describe the atmosphere at Lambeau Field.
Guys, I'll tell you what. That is, without question, one of the most sacred, historic places to play in the National Football League. You know, and I was so lucky and blessed to have the opportunity to go to such a franchise that was so rich in tradition. I mean, they won more world championships than any other franchise in NFL history. And the unity and the camaraderie between all the alumni and all the great players, including Bart Starr, Paul Hornung, Jerry Kramer, Ray Nitschke, I mean, Fuzzy Thurston, Max McGee. We become such good friends with those guys. They come to all the games. We have a lot of alumni events. And to be a part of that family, it's just incredible. And the atmosphere there at Lambeau Field, they have a sellout every game, every preseason game. It's a special place to play. You know, it's a little tough in December, I'll tell you, when it gets out into the
I was just going to say, what was the coldest time that you played up there?
It was probably about minus 10 degrees. Mm-hmm. We played up there, and I mean the field was completely frozen. It was all ice, and it was a tough place to play. But luckily, really, that was the only one real bad game that I had as far as the real cold weather when I was playing there. You know, I had some cold games in Chicago as well, but I was pretty fortunate. Never had a blizzard, never had a snowstorm in the 6 years that I played there. But what a great place, and you know, I still get back there often, and. Yeah, but the fans are just wonderful there.
You know, a wild thing I noticed here, and I vaguely remember this. Originally, when you got to Green Bay as a 10th-round draft pick, you wore jersey number 5.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Which is, How could they have done that? They gave Paul Hornung's jersey to you. And then,
it's a funny story. I'm best friends with Paul Hornung. Matter of fact, I just talked to him the other day. And he invited my wife and I to go to the Kentucky Derby and be a guest of his in his suite. He's inviting 50 people this year. So he's a great friend. And he was doing radio broadcasts for the Packers radio network back when I was playing. And I remember as a 10th-round rookie coming in, you know, as a 10th-rounder, you don't have any really real chance of making a team. Or they didn't think you did. You know, I thought I had a great chance. I just hurt my senior year at Virginia. But I knew when I went into camp that I would give a good showing and I would impress some coaches. So, but when I went in there and I requested that, when I first got there, I said, hey, the 10th-rounder, I said, you guys don't have number one by any chance, do you? They looked at me like I was crazy trying to ask for my own number as a 10th-rounder. And the equipment manager just threw me number 5. And, you know, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. A number 5, I mean, Mr. Horning's number? I said, I don't want to wear. I couldn't believe it wasn't retired. And they said, that's it. In a camp, back in camp in 87, when I was back there, we had 100 guys in camp. So they had to give out every number, you know, and I don't think they thought it would stick with me that I would make the team, but I did, and I wore it my whole rookie year, and Paul Hornung was doing the games, and I apologized to him that, you know, they gave me his number, and he said, hey, kid, if they gave my number to anybody, I'm really glad they gave it to somebody like you. You remind me a little bit about me. Back when I was younger, you know, I had the long blonde hair and a little free-spirited attitude like Hornung had back when I was younger, and he kind of liked me as a player and as a person, so we hit it off right away. And but after that first year when I became the established starter, I definitely put his number aside and I requested number 7 to just try to start my own identity for the rest of my career.
You mentioned Mr. Hornung. That's generally what I tell Frank to call me, call me Mr. Hobgood. You know, speaking of coaches and so forth, I know you have 2 children, one of which is a boy, and I understand you're doing some coaching with his team. Tell us a little bit about your family and what you're doing now.
Yeah, sure. My wife is from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we dated for 6 years, and I played in Green Bay. We've been married now for 15 years, so we've been with each other for a long time. And I have a daughter, a 14-year-old daughter, Danielle, who's an avid soccer, basketball, volleyball player, great athlete, tall girl, straight-A student, great girl. And I have a 12-year-old boy who I've been coaching for the last years in football, and just by luck, he is a quarterback, and I've been mentoring him. You know, and I'm not one of those dads that I'm not trying to mold him to be like me. He just absolutely loves the position and is really a phenomenal athlete. He's doing a tremendous job for only being 12 years old. So it's a lot of fun coaching those young kids, and they're getting a lot better now. And the team we're on now is 5-0, and it looks like we could win the whole thing here in the state of Georgia. So it's exciting, a lot of fun. It's nice to give back to these kids and really give him a great opportunity to learn a lot about football at a young age from a guy who's, you know, played in the NFL.
Yeah, Georgia, now we hope he'll be a legacy back in Charlottesville. Don't let Georgia Tech or Georgia get involved with this younger Mikowski.
I know. Well, I'm actually taking them to the game this week. We play an early game this Saturday, and we will be down at the Virginia-Georgia Tech game this weekend. I think we have some field passes, so we'll be down there for the pregame, I think, a little bit. So we'll say hi to some old coaches, some old people we know from Virginia, and actually looking forward to hopefully having an opportunity to meet Coach London. Haven't had an opportunity to meet him yet. So, he's going to have some choices. I can't see it by the time he gets there. So he could very well end up at UVA. That would be pretty cool.
You know, Don, I was looking at 1989 for you in Green Bay, and just to flash back, I remember that season. How many games that year did you and the Packer offense pull out of the hat towards the end of those games?
Yeah, I think there were 6 fourth quarter wins. I think we won 4 games that year by 1 point or less. It was an exciting year. I mean, that was my first year. They're really coming in to my own. It was my third year as a starting quarterback. You know, I led the league in passing and yardage and touchdowns and made all pro, and was just extremely excited with the opportunity that I had as a starting quarterback in my career and for our team. I mean, we end up 10-6. Didn't make the playoffs that year, unfortunately. But, you know, unfortunately, the next year, in the 8th game of the season, I think, is when I went down. I was leading the league in passing again in the 8th game, and I went down. I got slammed onto my shoulder in Arizona and tore the rotator cuff on my passing shoulder. And that really put a big damper on the rest of my career. I had major reconstructive shoulder surgery. I rehabbed it. I came back for the next season. I played 6 more years, but the shoulder just never came back to its original form. And I definitely lost a little bit of zip, a little bit of accuracy, some strength, and I lost some confidence, you know. So that was really difficult to deal with as a player. And then, you know, obviously at my last year in Green Bay in 92, I went down and tore ligaments in my ankle in the third game of the season. And that's when old man Favre took over for me in 92. And the guy's still just playing today and hasn't missed a game since. So,
so basically, you preceded Lou Gehrig, basically.
Yeah, but hey, Don.
Yeah, no, that's Wally Pipp.
Yep, absolutely. Well,
hey, real quick, just to promote something. I think the end of October or early November, NFL Films actually came down here, and for 3 days they followed me, and they're doing a documentary on my career and the whole, you know, promising young career that I had, and the issue with Favre taking over and everything, and they were doing what am I doing now, and they had me down here doing some of my business ventures, and they also came to my son's games. They had me wired up, and they had me filming my son, and had me coaching my son. So it's going to be a cool documentary on NFL Network and ESPN by NFL Films Presents. So keep an eye out for that.
We will. Cool. Absolutely. Don Majkowski. Don, thanks so much for joining us. We'll hope to have you on again sometime.
Okay, guys. Anytime. I'd love to be a friend of the show.
All right, former Virginia superstar Don Majkowski joining us. We will go to break now. We'll be back after the break with the Sabres, Chris Wright.